North Georgia Business Radio presents the best of Business Radio X. Business Radio X serves as the voice of business in cities around the country. And every day, Business Radio X lets you hear from business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners, allowing them to share their stories of success. I'm Mike Salmon, and today on the show, we're going to share some of the conversations heard recently in our Business Radio X studio in Gwinnett County. Today, you'll hear the amazing story of a local man who built his business from the ground up, starting with no money at all to selling it years later for millions of dollars. We'll also hear from the inspirational owner of a local music school who's teaching her students about a lot more than just music. And later on, an interview with a local restaurant owner who's hoping to win you over. But up first, the dangers of distracted driving. On a recent episode of Case in Point, which airs every Wednesday morning at 11:30, host Rick Strawn spoke with Ellen Diamond of Fleet Guardian, a company that's using technology to make the roads safer.
When I was presented with this opportunity to join Fleet Guardian, again, it's a technology, but it does something really good because it keeps people safe. And that was an exciting opportunity to take what I love to do, is the technology and application and doing something, but also making the roads a safer place, because Fleet Guardian is all about keeping people off their phones while they're driving.
Let me ask you this. Why is distracted driving from mobile phone use so dangerous?
Everybody thinks that multitasking is a thing, but it's not. You can really only do one thing at a time. There have been all sorts of studies about multitasking itself, and what multitasking is actually just flipping very quickly between multiple tasks. So when you think you're multitasking and you're driving and you're reading a text message, you're only doing one or another. And if you're on the road, you really need to be paying attention to your driving. So think about it this way. If you're driving at 55 miles an hour and you look away from the road for 5 seconds, do you have any idea how far you've just driven?
A long way.
You've driven, that's right. You have now driven the length of a football field. And think about all the trouble you could have gotten into in an accident in the length of a football field at 55 miles an hour.
Yeah, especially when there's a lot of people out here that can't drive looking at the road.
There you go. So that's why distracted driving is such a problem. When you have not just yourself, you're putting yourself at risk, but you're putting others at risk by not paying attention to the task at hand, which is the road, the lights, the people, the cars in front of you, your passengers. It's really important to keep people safe.
Well, and that kind of brings us to what are the risks? I mean, you've always, real quick, you can think of, well, what if you have children in your car?
Right.
What if somebody else has children in their car?
Right.
So the children aspect comes into it just almost immediately in my thought process, and I don't think some of the young people, the young millennials, they don't think about it because a lot of them don't have kids. So they don't even think about this. So what would you say are the risks related to distracted driving from the use of a mobile phone?
27% of accidents in cars are caused by mobile phone use. And that's a statistic from the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration.
That's big.
That's a big number. On top of that, about 57% of drivers actually admit that they text while they're driving. That's a really big number.
And that's only the ones that admit it.
That's only the ones that admit it. So I'm going to assume, like you do, that it's probably a bigger percentage than that as well. If you do think about the costs of an accident, the average cost of a car accident like that, or vehicle accident, is $24,000. And that's a lot of money. And that's not even, especially on the corporate side, and Fleet Guardian, I'll tell you a little bit about that in a second, but Fleet Guardian is focused currently on working with corporate fleets. So if you have a group of salespeople that are all driving corporate issued vehicles, or if you're hauling grain or whatever your company is that you do distribution or delivery, or you're a local HVAC or plumbing company that has a fleet of vehicles that you use to drive around, you know, that's a big expense, especially for a smaller company. It's a big expense for any company. But then you've also got things like downtime from your vehicle damage. You've got insurance issues. You certainly don't want your employees or your neighbors to be injured, in addition to whatever the medical and insurance costs are associated with that. And one other thing that people don't necessarily mention so easily, but it's very true, is if it's your vehicle that's on the road and it's caused some horrific accident, everyone passing by is going to take out their phone. Hopefully not the drivers in the cars passing by, but the passengers are going to take a picture. And you don't want your logo to be the one that caused this horrific accident, because it'll get out there and it'll get hashtagged and it'll get picked up. And the PR nightmare is an intangible but very serious as well. So you've got people, you've got equipment, you've got insurance, you've got money, you've got medical. There's a whole list of reasons besides the fact no one wants to get into an accident.
And on the insurance thing, the more of these accidents that happen, as they have in the past, the more damages that are done, the higher the insurance rates go, not just necessarily for your company, but for all companies.
That's right.
Because they try to blend it out, and everybody pays more when there's a lot of accidents.
That's correct. And accidents are also sort of like people thinking about cancer. I'll never get sick. I'm not going to be the one to get cancer, until you do. And then it's too late. And so accidents are like that too. I can text while I'm driving. I'm not going to get in an accident. And the next thing you know, you have.
So. Well, we've already kind of covered some of the statistics regarding it. Are there any more statistics that you can think of that you want to mention to the listening audience?
Well, part of the problem is not so much a statistic, but everybody thinks that they can do this multitasking. There's a psychological aspect to it. All the apps on your phone that everybody, you get in your car, you put your phone in the cup holder, and off you go. And as soon as you hear that ring or that buzz or whatever it is, the first thing you want to do is reach for it, look at it, find out what is happening, because heaven forbid you miss a second of something. And it's very scientific the way most of the apps are developed. There are all sorts of studies and articles about, they are designed very specifically to make you want more, to feel very addictive. And it is actually kind of hard for you. You don't even realize the subconscious part of why you feel like you need to reach for that phone all the time. So that's more psychological, not so much statistical, but it makes it hard to keep away from it unless you just turn it off when you get in the car, which is the easy thing to do, actually.
Well, and that's what takes such a length of time with Georgia's new law to adapt to that law is that they say that it takes about a year of doing something before you can actually change a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a habit for most people to pick up the phone, to look at it, to reach over, hit the button, and then try and look at it and see what you're doing. Drive around instead of an earpiece, have it on your chest or something, talking
right.
to people.
The law that you're talking about here in Georgia became effective July 1st.
Correct.
And it is illegal to handle your phone unless you're in a legally parked spot. That's the simple way to describe how that law works. So even if you're at a red light, you're not allowed to pick up the phone anymore.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that. They think, well, I'm stopped in traffic, I'm not doing anything, I can do this. And you can always tell the ones that are doing it, because about 30 seconds after the light changes and the cars move forward, all of a sudden that car moves.
That's right.
And the police officers also look for that little hesitation too, because it's obvious that you're doing something that you're not paying attention to, you're driving.
That's right. So there's lots of ways everybody thinks they can kind of sneak around it, but you know, the forensics of that, it comes out eventually.
The important thing is keeping in mind of the safety issues about it. And
that's right.
That's really what the whole law was designed for, was to try to make it safer. You're never going to convince some people that they can't do it. Perhaps enough tickets and enough out-of-pocket will convince them.
Well, if I can share one more anecdote on that
sure.
with you. In New York City, for anyone that's familiar with rush hour traffic in New York City, people trying to get into the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, trying to get back home at the end of the day, it's more sitting still than it's more stop than it is go. And years ago when hands-free first started to become an issue, a policeman pulled over a car. This was in the New York Times. It was an article in the New York Times. And he said, you're not allowed to be holding your phone while you're driving. Oh, I'm sorry, just write me the ticket. That's fine. And the policeman said, no, I'm not going to give you a ticket. Oh, thank you, that's great. He goes, I'm pulling you out of the line. You're going to have to go around the block again.
I love it.
And that was an awesome lesson, because I guarantee sitting in that traffic again was far worse than any check he would have had to write for a ticket.
Absolutely, and he could have probably afforded the ticket.
Yeah.
That's why it was so quick.
Yeah, but the policeman was very serious about, get off your phone. You're not allowed to be doing this. You're too close to other cars. There's too many people. It's not safe.
One time when we were in New York and I was driving, I had my own vehicle there. My wife told me I should have been a cab driver.
Oh.
She said, you drive just like these damn cab drivers.
One of the big questions I hear is, but people say they need to look at their phones for the maps. And I always challenge them. And I tell them, because I've tried it myself and I've gotten responses back from customers, try driving for a week with your phone turned upside down. Don't look at the map. Google, as an example, which is one of the main navigation services that people use unless they buy something separate, has done a really, really good job at updating their service. It used to be it would say turn left and you'd be in the right lane because it didn't give you enough warning. Well, they've gotten really good now at saying in a quarter of a mile, turn left, get into the left lane.
So they're letting you know verbally anyway.
That's right. They're letting you know verbally and audibly, and you don't need to look at the map anymore.
And that's Ellen Diamond with Fleet Garden on Case in Point, presented by Paradigm Security Services. To hear the entire interview, visit BusinessRadioX.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Case in Point. Coming up next on the Best of Business Radio X, we'll hear from a man who rose from no money to selling his company years later for over $10 million. His story of success next on North Georgia Business Radio and the Best of Business Radio X. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the Best of Business Radio X. On this week's edition of Gwinnett Business Radio, Stephen Julian and I had the pleasure to interview local business hero Tim Mansour, a man who turned his dream as a 22-year-old with no money into a successful chain of fitness centers before selling the company for over $10 million. I want to talk about your history, Tim. It's really fascinating because you have been a very successful entrepreneur and businessman. Started with nothing and grew your businesses and eventually sold them for millions of dollars. Talk about your beginnings. It seems like you've always had that entrepreneurial spirit your whole life.
I did. I just something inside me wanted to go out on my own. I always wanted to be some manager or do a business, and I decided to go on my own. Did not understand much about business, especially how to find money. I did start with zero. And when I say zero, I meant zero. I had a great family, mother and father, both worked for other places for years and years. So even when I went to them to talk to them about it, they were lost. And I tell a lot of people that sometimes you tell your dreams to other people and they might just not understand them. So they're not trying to discourage you. They just don't understand. And my mother and father worked for companies for 30 years, and that's what they thought everybody was supposed to do. So when I went to them and said, I want to go out on my own, of course, they said I was crazy, like most of my other family. But we ended up just starting from zero, going to banks, learning as we went. And that was the biggest, not a regret, but something that I would like to help other people with, to give them some information. Because where I got it is when I'd get turned down, whatever they would say, I would turn around the next time and change it. So it was a long journey, but it was something that I will never forget and something that I will always be passionate about to help other people with.
So going back to the beginning, what was the first business that you were involved in?
The first business was a fitness, if it was called Fitness International. I had worked right out of college for about a year and a half, 2 years with another person, and found out that was my love. So we decided to try to go out on our own. And that's kind of where we heard about Gwinnett County and the growth of Gwinnett County. That's when we started our research for money.
Some of the stories we want to share, too, with the people that are listening is that it's not an easy road. You hit a lot of obstacles. I mean, you had cases where you had partners basically stealing money from you. Talk about some of the challenges you have and that it's not all gravy. It's not easy or else everybody would be doing it.
Exactly. And that's what I tell everybody. No matter what you go into in life, there will be what I call speed bumps. It's not if you're going to have them, it's when you're going to have them. And it's more importantly, how are you going to handle them? You can handle them by being negative, or you can handle them by saying that's something that I'll learn and move on and try to not let that happen again. I did have a situation with a partner that I thought was a partner, somebody that brought me in and actually took me under his arms. And at the end, I found out that he was making all the money and I was making zero. And it was probably the best thing that ever happened because it kind of woke me up and said, go on your own and make this happen. And that's exactly what we did.
You do some speaking now to entrepreneurs and students. Let me put you in that room. As you think about all the different businesses, if you could go back and give yourself one or two pieces of advice, what are some of the best pieces of advice you can give to business owners in today's environment?
The most important thing is most people have dreams. It's just how they're going to get there. And usually it's to do with financing. And what you have to remember is if somebody came to you and it's not personal, and said, I want to borrow even a $50,000, how would you handle it? You would make sure that how are they going to pay it back? And if they don't pay it back, how will you get your money back? And that's mainly what every bank's going to look at. No matter how much they smile at you or how much investor, they want to know, how can I get my money back? And it's not, the answer is not always, well, I'm going to work harder than anybody else. It's here's plan A, here's plan B, and here's plan C. So you always have a if it doesn't happen, because that's what they're looking for.
A lot of people might have been expecting in the room, oh, he's an entrepreneur who was successful in selling his businesses. He's going to give me some platitudes. I like that your number one piece of advice is it's about money. So be smart with it. It's not personal what they're doing. And come up with plan A, plan B, plan C. I like that. That's great advice. And the way to get to plan A, plan B, and plan C and having those plans, it's going from dreaming to details, right?
In reality, exactly. Set it on paper. And I would always see, when I was looking at some of the fitness centers that we built, and they were some of them 50,000 square feet, I almost had dreamed them and seen it before it happened. When I went into banks, and it never was easy to borrow money, I mean, especially for that kind of business. So many of them go out of business after the first year or two. But I would go in and I would give my speech. I would have everything on paper, and I would have the A, B, and C. And when I did, and I did get turned down a lot, I would mainly ask them, why would you turn me down? And whatever it was, I would change it next time I went in. Never took it personal, and I understood that people were giving me their money, and they would have to expect, you know, they expect everything, and we'd give them whatever they needed.
One of the methods you use, you call it the bulldozer method. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, I always told our people, we at one time had 300, and what I call not really employees, they were team members, and I would always say, do whatever it takes to, we would say it was the bulldozer way. It wasn't to run over people, it was say to do whatever it takes to get the job done as long as it was morally right. Because there were going to be problems. There was going to be things where people thought, gosh, can I handle this? And I knew they could. I knew we could. So we would do whatever it took as long as it was morally right.
You decided to go ahead and write a book, too, about your experiences and so forth. Why should they buy this book? What will they get out of this book?
I think my success, a lot of people think that I'm just the smart business guy. And I think the most important thing that I have done in business is find the right people around me. I'm definitely not the smartest in the room. I think if you think you're doing that, you got the wrong team. So I had great managers, great assistant managers. The most important thing is never think you're better than you are. I mean, you know, I'm a person that I love to push and to make things happen, but the people around me is really what's made me successful. There's so many myths out there that you have to have money to make money, and that is not true. I mean, if you look at most people didn't have money. So that's a myth. And also working with a family, you can't do that, or just things that we believe that so many people have in their mind that we don't want them to stop. You will find out in any business there will be little problems that you're going to have. It's just how you handle them, and it is the truth from starting with zero, and we definitely started with zero, and it did work out very well for us.
Not just little problems, big problems. Exactly. I mean, there were times where it's like, how am I going to get by this next week? You run out of money or whatever, and you plow through, bulldozer method.
That's exactly right. And there were some major problems that we all looked at each other and wondered, will we be here tomorrow? And thank goodness we were. And I think more than anything is when a big problem comes up, sit back and really talk to the people that are around you. There's a lot of people that you will get answers from that might not even be in the business that you're in. And they can see it from the outside and look outside the box. Because sometimes you get stuffed in one little area and you just think that's the only way to do it. And I have gotten some great insight from even my ladies that used to work in the nursery, or my front-end managers, or something that I would have never thought about. So just always listen. It's not like you have all the answers, that's for sure.
And that's Tim Mansour with Mansour International on Business Radio X. To catch the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Gwinnett Business Radio. Well, stay tuned. Coming up next, the inspirational story of a local music school owner who's teaching her students about a lot more than just music. And later on, meet the restaurant owner who's happy to serve you his chicken lips. Yes, I said chicken lips. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X, where we are sharing some of the on-air interviews from this past week. Valencia Giles owns the Lawrenceville Suwanee School of Music. On this week's episode of Gwinnett Business Radio, she shared her inspirational story of success with Steve and Julian and myself, and we found out that she's teaching her students a lot more than just about music.
Lawrenceville Suwanee School of Music is my heart. I'm just telling you, we have reached 500 students this month.
Wow.
And we're really excited about that. We've been around since 2009, and we offer quality music lessons for piano, voice, guitar, violin, art lessons, and many more instruments. We have extraordinary teachers, supportive parents, and we have this amazing staff. We're the most award-winning school in Gwinnett County. Best of Gwinnett 2015-16-17, Reader's Choice Awards 2015-16-17, Pinnacle Small Business Award. I'm a finalist for the Pinnacle Small Business Award for Women this year.
Congratulations.
So, and we just got back, our school, we just got back from Carnegie Hall. So I'm just like, that amazed me. So I got to tell you about that at some point, but that was so cool. And it's just a great school, and kids are from everywhere, not just USA, but from many other parts of the country. So it's a multicultural school. It's a family. And it's just nice. Amazing.
It's a shame, Stephen, that she's not passionate about what she does and really enjoys what she does. You know?
One of these days, we're going to get a business owner in here who really is excited and can really, you know, display that on the air.
My mission and why I do what I do is what makes us very different. You know, for me, love is my model. And then great musicianship is my goal. Then I want to inspire and educate and motivate kids to perform at their highest level, so that they can be confident, because truly, I was not a confident kid. And that life that I live has just transformed into me. And I believe as an owner and manager, you give your staff what you have. And so I'm able to give my staff the same vision to say, okay, here is our motto. If we can't love kids, we've already not gonna do a good job. But we've gotta pull all of that together. And so we do that, as well as we offer a lot of incentive programs. It's not like you walk in this building and there's a room here, room here. You walk in this building and there's a family and there's things going on. And we have incentive programs, and we've got funny money for the little kids. They earn funny money because they're practicing. Performance is twice a year, and all these incentive programs are free. I give that as a part of, I want to build something in kids where they have a, whether they play in Carnegie Hall or down the hall, I want them to have a memory when they're older that I learned something, and my experience changed my life, because music and teachers change your life.
I was going to say, these kids are learning a lot more than just music at this school.
They're going to do it a lot more than middle C, that's for sure.
Talk about this passion. Where did this come from?
Well, people would ask me.
And in your background and how you got to where you are today and opening the business.
People would say, Valencia, now that you have this amazing school and you have all these students, you find your dream has come true. And I thought, this has never been my dream. Isn't that something? To be so passionate. But that wasn't my dream. My story, if I can tell it really quickly. When I was about 6 years old, my dad and my mom, middle class, bought me this beautiful little spinet piano. I loved it. I practiced all the time. Eventually, I majored in music, double major, graduated with honors, just loved music. But the fifth year I did my student teaching, it was a disaster. I thought, oh my gosh, why did they make me do student teaching my last year in school? Because if I hadn't known it was this bad, I never would have majored in music. Anyway, I did it, and it was awful. And so you know what I did? I graduated, left music, started working in a computer science corporation, went back to school in computers, absolutely didn't know what I was doing, got married, and I just said, forget music, because I am not a great teacher. I had just decided I am not a good teacher. So I left from there, moved to Atlanta, 4 or 7 years later. I am this insecure person because that experience really devastated me in a way, because it just took away the thought of feeling that I could teach. So I left music and got here in Atlanta, and a girl from church who had a school offered me a job to teach music lessons. And I went, no, I'm really not good at that. And she said, come on, Valencia, I want you to try it. I tried it, absolutely loved it. I was just enjoying teaching so much, and my zeal and my passion grew back, and I thought, yes, this is what I'm supposed to do. One day I got sick, they called in a sub. The next day, my boss calls me and says, Valencia, they don't want you to come back. Not come back? What in the world? She says, they hired the sub. I just fell apart. I cried. It took me some time to get up off the floor. And by the time I got off the floor, I decided that day that I was going to work for myself. So I went home and I told my husband, I said, Ozzy, he's so amazing and good looking. And I said, honey, I can't do this. I know you're making a lot of money, but I need to stay at home and work with the kids, and I'm going to have the school at home. So I started my own piano lessons in my home. My husband said, you can do it. Started with one student, five students, 10 students, 25 students. Great. Still excited. I'm almost at the end of the story. And so I was so excited. And it grew in about 10 to 15 years. That's all I did. I was a stay-at-home mom teaching piano lessons in my home with about 30 students. Well, my father got sick, and he was a beautiful soul. He passed. 3 years after that, my mom had a stroke, and so she had to come move in with us. When she came in to move with us, it wasn't conducive to continue to have lessons in my home. So Ozzy said, Valencia, it's time for you to move the studio out of the home. And said, I said, okay, we'll do that. And we moved the studio outside of the home. And we started, for logistical reasons, teaching lessons in this building in 2009, right in the middle of a recession, where people were saying, you shouldn't open a business now. This is not a good time. And I'm like, well, it is the time for me, because this is what is going on in my life.
You're not
going
to listen to that negative stuff.
I am not. Just because you fell into the mud doesn't make you mud. You might be muddy. Things may not be going well, but you're gonna do this.
Don't be the mud.
That's right. I'm saying. So my husband and I together, we opened this business, borrowed $5,000 from my uncle, and we opened it debt-free. We worked that thing, and we started with two teachers, myself and another teacher, and about 30 students. And we're up to 500 today.
Man. But about to open a second location.
And getting ready to open a second location. And we did that with nothing. And I just thought, at that point, that was not my dream. But what happened is we just started making money and helping people. And what was always my dream was to help people and to serve people and to do things for people. I was once told, money is good if you can serve with it. But if you are only buying things with it, it's going to be disastrous for you. When money can do things for other people. So now I'm passionate because somehow I was able to connect what I love with what I loved.
You're doing it through music.
I love music and I love helping. And together they have created this wonderful school for me. So I'm just really grateful that it was a logistical move. And that third year is when I figured that out, because we had grown to about 200 students. And I went, my goodness, this is a business. The first 2 years, I didn't know what it was. And I went, this is a business. So I got a mentor who started teaching me and helping me. And that's how we got to 500. And I hired all these smart people around me. And we've been growing ever since. And my husband, he's the nucleus that holds everything together,
Shout out to Ozzy.
Shout out to Ozzy.
Who's handsome, right?
He is.
He's a stud.
He's a handsome man.
Good looking.
Well, Valencia, this is where you just drop the mic and walk out the studio.
Okay.
Walk out the door right now. Drop the mic.
Mike, I only have one correction I have to make to your story. You said you built this with nothing. You built it with love and musicianship.
Absolutely.
Which is your passion and your mission. So
Absolutely. Clearly
the mission is being accomplished.
And that's Valencia Giles with the Lawrenceville Swanee School of Music. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Gwinnett Business Radio. Coming up next, you'll hear the challenges from an executive chef who's making changes at a well-known local restaurant. But one thing he won't change on the menu are the chicken lips. That story next on North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. The best of Business Radio X, where we are sharing some of the recent interviews that took place in our Gwinnett studio. At one time, Tanner's was a highly successful local restaurant operation with several locations in the metro Atlanta area. But the restaurant went through some changes and some hard times, and the last remaining Tanner's is located in Suwanee. Well known for their chicken fingers and their chicken lips, yes, chicken lips, the restaurant was bought by a local executive chef. On this week's Shut Up and Eat on Business Radio X, host Tom Voris spoke with the man who is giving Tanner's a second life.
One of the new owners of Tanner's, Jose Laus. How you doing, Jose?
Good, how are you?
I say one part because the other half is your wife, Christina.
75%.
75%. Well, she's the boss. We know
exactly,
how that works.
Exactly.
And I say new owners only because we've got to emphasize that. You guys have actually been the owners of Tanner's now for 2 years.
Correct. We took over in June of 16.
June of 16. And there are still people that aren't quite getting that yet.
We just got a phone call yesterday asking to speak to Rick Tanner, who it's actually been 15 years since he's been there. And then we told them we're the new owners, and they were shocked. So, yeah, the people are still – and we put banners up and everything, but people still come by and wonder, you know, where the old owners are, you know.
Yeah. When you guys took it over and I had the opportunity to meet with, you know, you and your wife, I mean, I definitely saw night and day. You know, you
good,
guys.
Good, I hope.
Yes. Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, good. I mean, you guys, very welcoming, you know, and I can tell you guys care.
It was a dilemma for us, actually, because we were going to name it something else, our own name. But we know Tanner's has a history in Suwanee and actually throughout Atlanta. And the old owner wanted us to keep it Tanner's. And even though it had some baggage associated with it, you know, in the last 10, 12 years, we went along with the owner and kept the name. And it's been a curse and a blessing at the same time. Because Tanner's has been known through, it's a, you know, staple in Atlanta.
Right.
But then we've also, if you look at, you know, reviews prior to 2 years before we took over, it was a rough patch for Tanner's. So it was a challenge for us to come back and bring it to what we wanted to.
Here's the thing, guys. Tanner's has been around for a long time, and they do. They are very well known for some really, really good food. Their ribs are off the charts. Okay, and I say this from experience because as the owner of Choices to You, I'm also one of my better customers. I order rather regularly, and I order from Tanner's a lot. Matter of fact, gatherings I have at my house, I usually go to the catering route with them for the ribs, like I said, but the chicken lips. Those chicken lips, yes, I said chicken lips, folks. Those are like a Southwest egg roll, correct?
It is, yes.
But just the name. When I tell people about that, they're like, what? And I say, look, take a bite. You know, you guys, you kept the name, but you kept some of the staple products.
Absolutely. We when we took over and saw lips on the menu, we were like, we're changing the name first thing. But then we had several guests that would drive hours for lips. And sometimes if we were out of them, they would wait up to 3 hours to be made. And I was like, okay, I can't touch this, you know.
And you guys make them, right?
We make, yeah,
yes,
we make.
They are freshly made. They're not pre-packaged.
No. We make it all from scratch. And then also the chicken fingers. Those two things we will not touch.
Well, damn things are huge.
They are.
They are the biggest chicken fingers. I mean, that's some fat fingers.
Yeah, we get them. I mean, they're about 3 ounces each, which with the batter on them, they're almost 4.5 ounces each. So, but those two things we haven't touched and we will not touch because that will just kill us, you know.
I agree. The baked beans, too.
Yeah.
The baked beans are phenomenal. Guys, if you have not been to Tanner's, for one, if you've never been, what the heck's your problem? Two, if you haven't been there in a few years, go. Meet the owners. They're super nice people. you are also an executive chef. Tell me about your history. You know, when you got into it, where?
I started in the food business as a cook when I was 17. So I'm on my 33rd year now in the business.
I like that he's aging himself.
I've done nothing. I've really done nothing else. But when I was young, my mother and I, we purchased a restaurant. And at that time, we had no idea of really what we were doing. Mm-hmm. But we were producing good food at that time. And after that, I went to a Culinary Institute of America, graduated. And then I started working right after that. And I became an executive chef shortly, like in my mid-20s. And I've been that since then. My last stint was at the Capitol Grill. I was executive chef partner for 6 years in Buckhead. And Tanner's came up for sale. We decided to take a dive, you know. And sometimes mm-hmm. my wife is like, why did we do this, you know? why did we do this, you know? But I really enjoy seeing happy guests and satisfied guests, mm-hmm. you know. So
the staff is great. Again, like I said, the food is great. I also noticed, okay, there's a pot roast that you made. Is that what it
right? It is, yes.
Now, was that a Tanner's item before, or is this something that you...
This is on my new...
Because you mentioned you're coming up... Correct. You're working on new items. So
I'm implementing new menu items to modernize it a little bit more. This I call pot roast, but it's a lot more than that.
I saw that. It really looks good.
We actually use demi-glace for the sauce, so that's like a very expensive reduced veal base. And we use red wine as well. And I don't mention that at all, you know. And then on top of that, our meat is short rib, which is a very good cut of meat.
Mm-hmm, it is.
And nobody would ever call it pot roast, you know. They would call it short rib. But for our guests, I think it's more approachable,
right,
you know, because
right.
I did have it on the menu before as short rib, and we sold like none.
Right.
And ever since I've been calling it pot roast, it's one of our top sellers.
It's all in the name.
And exactly. And I don't put what the ingredients are. It takes forever to make. The sauce takes hours and hours to make.
And it's made with love, though.
Exactly. And I don't put any of that. I just put pot roast. And then people, you know, are more, you know,
associated. Well, yeah, then they have it and they're like,
exactly.
Oh my God, this mm-hmm. is awesome.
Right. If they knew, if.
Sometimes it's better not to tell all.
Exactly.
As long as it's nothing bad, you know, which is not, you know. Two children.
Correct.
Two girls, you said?
Two beautiful girls, Alexis and Kaylee, 10 and 9.
10 and 9.
Yes. Awesome. And they can work a restaurant like anybody. I mean, they can work almost every position.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yes.
I mean,
amazing.
They were pretty much born with a spatula.
Even though I tell them I never want you working in a restaurant once you grow up, but they're amazing. They've been so patient with us because, as most restaurant families are, they tend to spend a lot of time at the restaurant.
Yeah.
And sometimes I tell them they don't understand this, but I'm like, it'll be worth it one day, and mm-hmm. you know, I'll take you to Disney one day again, like we used to go. they've been so patient and amazing. So at the moment, I'm almost working 7 days a week now. So it's
The beauty of being a business
owner. Exactly. It's so glamorous, you know.
Yes, it is very glamorous.
Food Network has cursed us because they're like, oh, it's such a great life or whatever. You know?
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, it is great for them because they just do the show.
Exactly.
And
they just take stuff. We are trying to get to the restaurant to the level where we want it to be. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there's still a lot of negative connotations to Tanner's, you know. And sometimes when you look at stuff that's been online, people are like, oh, Tanner's is horrible, Tanner's this and stuff. And it's people who actually haven't been there in a couple of years.
Exactly, that's
the
thing. Yeah.
So I like to invite people and say, you know, if you haven't been in a couple of years, give us a try. Because my wife's and I philosophy is if you don't leave unhappy, you know, if there's something that you don't like, you know, you're not going to pay a penny for it, and we'll get you something else that you like it. Mm-hmm. But we're definitely that mindset that. And we tell our servers this, we cannot let any guest leave unhappy or even semi-happy. They have to leave like,
that's
this
cool.
was, you know, we got our money's worth and we had a great meal.
And that's Tom Voris with ChoicesToYou.com talking with the owner of Tanner's Restaurant on the show Shut Up and Eat. To listen to the entire interview, go to BusinessRadioX.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then click on Shut Up and Eat. Well, that's it for now. Business Radio X lets you hear from the top business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners in our communities, allowing them to share their stories of success. Today's interviews were just a few of thousands that you can hear anytime, 24/7, by visiting the Voice of Business, businessradiox.com. Until next time, I'm Mike Salmon, and this has been North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X.